Yeah, absolutely. There are contentious subjects when you talk about wargaming in certain places or naming certain geographical features. It's going to be a mix of analog and digital, so there's really no debate. The purists, the wargaming traditionalists, or that or this, like the technology's here, like it's here, and we need to start embracing it. The biggest limitation is going to be us. It's going to be humans.
This is The Convergence, the Army's Mad Scientist podcast. I'm Matt Sanisbert, Deputy Director of Mad Scientist, and I'll be joined in just a moment by Rachel Melling. Mad Scientist is a U.S. Army initiative that continually explores the evolution of warfare, challenges assumptions, and collaborates with academia, industry, and government. You can follow us on social media at ArmyMadSci or subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Today we're talking with U.S. Army Colonel Arnel David, Director of the Strategic Initiatives Group at NATO Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe. We'll talk with Colonel David about his views on wargaming in the U.S. Army and at NATO, how technology is shaping the evolution of wargaming, and how to push it to the forefront of professional military education. As always, the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Army Futures Command, or the Training and Doctrine Command. Let's get started. We're joined by a guest who we've had on the show. It's been quite a while. I was actually looking at our previous episodes, and we've published over 100 at this point, and you were on the 15th episode, so you were kind of there at the beginning. Welcome to the show, Colonel Arnel David.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. Quite an honor to return back to your show. I listen to you quite regularly on the way to work.
Excellent. We're glad to have you. We're glad to have you back as well. So as I said, this is the second time you've been on the show, but you're in a different position now than you were before. So can you give us an update on what you're doing now, how that's changed from where you were?
Yeah, thank you. So I'm at NATO Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe, so NATO SHAPE in Mons. And my job here is I'm the director for the Strategic Initiatives Group. And it's a pretty incredible job and privilege assignment to coordinate a lot of like transformational activity that's happening at SHAPE, but also do research analysis for SACEUR. This is, and I got a wonderful, talented team. I'm the only American. I got Brits, French, Polish. Just a great team that, as a small team, we do a lot of stuff. And so it's quite a great place to be right now. And it's a big year for us, a lot of big changes underway.
Sir, you've been involved in wargaming for a long time now between your uniform service and USA Fight Club. So how is NATO SHAPE using wargaming?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And it's a great opportunity for me to just highlight some of the great stuff happening at SHAPE. We now have a wargaming department under Erica De Gaetano. He's a retired Italian brigadier general who's leading a group, and we're hiring, you know, this is a good plug, we are hiring more wargaming SMEs and experts. And so keep up. I think I've seen a lot of posts on LinkedIn from the ACO Innovation Management Branch Director, Dr. Henri Kynenkamp. And so this is a great time for us. Like, we're building out the capability. We have the guys that are there now, Patrick and Erica, you know, messing around with different, they're creating strategic level games that they're trying to use for the Alliance to war game at a larger scale. The Alliance is big. And so all these different, the 32 nations we have now and all those capabilities, they're building a game to allow us to war game regularly our war plans. We're also messing around and prototyping with new ways to do counterterrorism type games. And so Patrick, one of the guys in the war gaming department, is using, I mean, it's just spreadsheets, and it's pretty advanced use of spreadsheets to calculate blue and red in terms of activity for counterterrorism and hybrid operations. And so our team is it's still nascent. I mean, it's like just a little over a year old, but they're out here trying to pull together different games and try different stuff. But it's an exciting time. We're partnering with the NATO Innovation Hub, the Strategic Initiatives Group, the SIG, ourselves, and an academic, a really prestigious academic institution, I can't name it, as we're going into, you know, contracting, mechanisms are underway to do something called, like, what does MDO look like? And so a lot of people evoke the MDO, and all these various buzzwords. And I'm sure you guys get it on your end over there in TRADOC, and it's all over the place. So multi-domain operations, what does this look like? And so we're now going to start to set out a contest and simulate, have people submit their ideas and then use things like Command Professional Edition and other simulations to simulate what does MDO look like. And hopefully for educational purposes, but also for, like, I'm going to put this, the best ideas, like in a Shark Tank fashion, pick the best winners and put that right in front of in the warfighting conference for all our generals to see, what do these things, these combinations of capabilities look like on a modern battle space.
That's a great idea. If I can just ask another question as a follow-up to that, who's that going to be open to? Who are you looking to get ideas from on that?
Yeah, so I'm probably like marketing this idea pretty early, but I know it's about to, I think 1 November, we're going to announce it formally from NATO Innovation Hub and from the SIG where I'm at in Shape. And I think we're just going to open it up because, as you guys have talked about before in your former guests, like crowdsourcing, you know, casting that very wide and exercising our imagination fully with different types of audiences, a diverse audience. Who knows? We might be surprised with what we get back. And some of the institution I won't name yet has artificial intelligence tools to do analysis of those submissions and try to, once you put in the parameters and do some stuff, it'll kind of calculate, surface up if we get a lot of them, which we hope to, it'll surface up the top ones for us to take a look at, but we'll definitely take a look at all of them and just kind of start to score them and then review them and then create vignettes, stories, videos, make it interactive, make it really exciting so that we're like, okay, you know, maybe you can't simulate something cyber through the game, but you know, you want to do a cyber effect. Well, maybe it's a picture of someone screwing around with a computer and sending signals and you see electrons firing and that cyber activity happens and you see something just kind of shut down. So we want to be very creative with how we describe multi-domain operations and help educate our force and our leaders on what that looked like with everything that's happening, learning from Ukraine. What might that look like against the PRC or the Russians or whoever else we might have to fight?
That sounds like a really cool initiative. I'll be looking forward to it when it comes out. And, you know, we have a pretty robust network that we could probably link in and hopefully get some more participation in there. So this whole interview is part of our wargaming series as we lead up to the conference in November, which you'll be at, and we have you on a panel, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And one of the reasons we want to do that conference is to see what's happening outside of the Army, because we know a lot about Army wargaming, but we want to see what everybody else is doing. So with you at NATO, are they doing anything substantially different from what the U.S. is doing with wargaming, especially as it pertains to the execution of games and then what you can learn from them?
Yeah, so between NATO and UCOM, I've seen a number of ideas and, you know, at different classification levels, different types of games or methodologies. And, you know, it's great because like I've written this before and we've talked about it in our last podcast and I still believe it, a mixed method approach. You know, I think you wrote with Sebastian Bay, no run ring to rule them all. And what it's going to require is like, a war game in itself is not the end state. It's not going to be definitive. It's like another data point. So I'll give an example. So one of the areas that we have lots of, you know, that's kind of volatile is the Balkans. And we want to make sure we maintain peace and stability there, that our competitors are not exploiting ethnic tensions. And this battle of narratives is really hard. So again, partnering with the NATO Innovation Hub and Fight Club Turkey and some others, we're going to use large language models to do psychometric profiles on different ethnic groups and then play that out in a contested narratives war game and come up with a scenario to make sure that, one, it's educational, because then a lot of people don't understand the Balkans. If you haven't looked at it in a while, I got to go out to the Sarajevo for the Sarajevo Security Conference not too long ago. And it's just a really complex, dynamic environment with lots of different agendas. And it's hard to understand if you're not studying it and you're not an expert in the region. And so we think this war game will be educational, but it's also going to allow us to just test out these narratives so you don't say the wrong things, or we don't do the wrong things, or they're interpreted wrong, or what are the perceptions? And I think that's going to be really cool. We're working on that now. So that'll be a different type of game, I think, that most of us haven't seen yet. And so Fight Club Turkey, Burke Capaldi and Ada Elson are leading on that. And they've done some testing of that already. They show me some stuff they've done. I mean, they helped in a election in Ankara, where they helped the governor like get elected because they were running these psychometric profiles for different groups and saying, hey, you shouldn't say this, or you should say this because it'll resonate more with this group. And I mean, from what I hear, it helped this guy get reelected. So like it's a powerful thing, using these tools to our benefit. But those are just some examples, and I probably could go on for a while, but I mean, there's a lot of cool little things that we're trying to do with wargaming in NATO. And you know, NATO's big. So the one thing I'll say is like, I couldn't even speak for NATO, right? Because like, I'm just in one area. And I learned all the time, like, there was a war game for this. There's this Foursquare war game that's happening in the month of October that's being provided by ACT at the policy level on deterrence. I mean, this is great. There's all kinds of games, and at least they're getting out there and spreading out, and they're all kinds of different games. So it's a good time for wargaming. And if those of you that are looking for jobs in wargaming, come to NATO. We're going to start doing more of it.
So additionally, have you seen any advances in technology that have affected the wargaming experience? Or is NATO Shape working to integrate technology into their wargaming in any specific way?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I mean, the one thing that's really hot right now is generative AI. And, you know, with large language models, and how are we going to use that? And gosh, I hate to steal their sandwiches. And, you know, ACT, this is one of the things I saw from over Marcus Gall, the artificial intelligence director. He just was showing me the output of a game where he had the AI. They ran a game and AI was one of the opponents and it was performing way better than the human teams. But then I'm like, well, what about the human and AI team? Would that be better? But we're playing around with these things. And the thing is, it gives you speed. So you don't have to set up, you know, some of the games, traditional war games, take a lot of resources and time and people. And so the technology is allowing us to automate things, your order of battle, things that you would normally take a minute to put together. If we have it digitized, we can automate it. There's a large language model with it loaded. NATO doctrine is loaded. So when you're saying, what do you mean by secure? The technical task here, we're not having fist fights over one word. And you're like, no, this is the ask Alexa or ask Alexa for war, right? What does it say? Okay, so we can start to do some of those things. We're not there yet, obviously, because like this is still early days of testing and integrating and trying to get it onto like NATO secret and all our classified spaces and instances. And I think you guys talked about in your last podcast with Sebastian, like that is a clear challenge. But what I would say is that we do sense an urgency. We do know our competitors and our potential adversaries are trying to do all these things. And we don't want to fall behind and give them an advantage because they're wargaming differently than us. They're doing a correlation of forces and means and getting different types of formulas and thinking they might have an advantage or doing whatever. And so we are doing a number of things that will allow us to just operate with speed and efficacy to improve the way we fight. And one thing I'll highlight, again, this is to brag about the Army again, and I mentioned it in another podcast on War on the Rocks, is, you know, 2nd Cavalry Regiment. I was really, really proud to see these Iron Majors working under Colonel McChrystal employ a number of different tools, commercially available tools, to wargame on the go to check their COAs as they're doing saber strike alongside a German panzer battalion and a Spanish mechanized battalion. They are operating on the go, doing stuff, checking their course of action, using, I think it's called LG Raid, is one of these tools to check if their force ratios are right, and then adjusting on the fly, saying we need to send more air support here, we need to do that, we need to adjust the axis of advance, the enemy's actually doing this. And they are having a live COP and adjusting on the fly. And I think them doing that now in exercises is super exciting, and it's extraordinary because they're not waiting for your like official 10-year program to be delivered, and then here it is. They're like moving the hell out and going, hey, let's just do this now. And I'm sure they're making CIO G6s of the world really uncomfortable in a good way. And then they find the way to make sure it's secure, it's interoperable with our partners and allies. And that I saw that, and I was like, that is cool. Cause like I've not ever seen nothing like that. So I know that's a US Army Europe example, but thankfully one of those majors, Major Brian Halsey, he's like working now in our NMR office. I'm like, guess what, man? Welcome to Fight Club in Shape. Need you to get on this now. Let's start bringing this in. And he's on board to help bring that technology and all these different tools and artificial intelligence into our headquarters. And it's been a fight because, as you know, you have to achieve consensus. Consensus is king in NATO. So like getting requirements to the table, getting allies to approve it hasn't been easy, but we've had some recent wins and victories that we're really proud. And we did that because of the team and because of these mid-grade officers stepping up and just doing the homework and marshaling the evidence and making a compelling story for why we need this for the alliance. So we have the best tools available to practice warfighting.
No, that's really cool. And it makes me think of something. Because when you were mentioning, you know, what Sebastian talked about on the last episode about some of the challenges with classification, working in NATO, I bet you have even more challenges because we're not talking, I mean, navigating the bureaucracy of the U.S. Army is difficult enough, but now you're talking with a number of foreign governments. Do you see any other challenges there working with, there may be restrictions on what you can say or what you can share with certain other foreign governments, getting everybody together in a room for a war game?
Yeah, absolutely. There are contentious subjects when you talk about wargaming in certain places or naming certain geographical features that we always have to be careful about. And so there's that going on. And to be honest, like, so General Cavoli, he pushes us to just like, hey, like realism is is a thing, right? So like, let's not play make believe. This is not Chronicles of Narnia. Like, we want serious games, like serious, like as accurate as possible about the red and the blue. Like, we need to know what we have. Like, is it, it isn't the, you know, I've been involved in NATO exercises and war games before, from when I was in my time in the UK, the NATO Allied Rapid Reaction Corps. And it, I was always like, wow, this is like, again, it was Chronicles of Narnia. I'm like, we're never going to have all this stuff. Like, why are we wargaming it? Why are we inflating the numbers or doing, you know, well, we will have it. But for a fight tonight scenario, like, I think it's best that we test out what we have against, again, what's accurate with what we have and what do we think they're going to have? And what does reconstitution look like and this and that? And I think that there are challenges, like, no doubt. But what I would say is that I think that there's a cultural change underway at SHAPE, and everyone understands the sense of urgency. You know, Putin's helping us a lot with his invasion of Ukraine. And so people are starting to get it, starting to click that, hey, we don't have time. You know, we can be in a dust up here pretty soon, and we better be ready. And so I think we can normally make the case that it's worth the try. There's a risk in trying. There's a greater risk in not trying, because we just, you know, allow ourselves to be complacent or just accept the status quo. And so we are trying to do things differently. We are trying different wargaming platforms. We are trying to put these things on different systems of classification. And we're breaking glass every day. I mean, we're pushing through, and hopefully we have more people pushing through and fighting for the best tools possible so that the Alliance has what it needs to war game and prepare for a fight.
Yeah, it sounds like you're making a lot of progress and you're really motivated on that side to continue this. So on that same line of thinking, how do you see wargaming evolving over the next 10 years now?
Yeah, I saw this question come in. I was thinking about it today. So 10 years from now, we always get, you know, trying to think that far away. I'm sure we're going to get it all wrong, but there are a lot of things in the laboratories, a lot of things we're doing now that reflect how it's going to look going forward. And I think what you're going to have is, I think I already alluded to this earlier, is like the technologies are going to save us time. They're going to allow us greater speed to do more, to get more reps and sets. And so that what I see happening is like, we should be, if war fighting is our core business, those of us in uniform and those of us in any organization in the military, if that's our core business, then why are we spending calories on a lot of other things? We need to spend more time worried about our core business. So like, I see people coming to work, they're involved in different games throughout the week. They have an application telling them, hey, don't forget, you got to get into this war game. And it's, you can do a quick, you know, a match, or you can go, you know, get into some kind of fight that's only going to take an hour or two because it's all digital. And it's going to be a mix. Like, you go into a room, who knows, in 10 years, it could be holograms that are popping up. And it could be, you know, we could do it now. The technology is available where the counters for a normal traditional board game with a map and counters, there could be electrical components that are reflecting now onto a digital screen. And you still have the benefit of like interacting with, you know, pieces. Some people want to see things with their hands or see the mass on the table of all the forces and have an appreciation for time distance factors. But that can also be digitalized. And then you can also have the computer assisted calculations so that you might have a tablet and you're just kind of like, you know, punching in your moves or doing stuff. I think gaming is going in that direction. And the quicker we can get on with it or start trying these things, it's going to be a mix of analog and digital. So there's really no debate. I mean, people are like, oh, the purists, the wargaming traditionalists are that or this. I'm like, hey, we all need the technology's here. Like, it's here and we need to start embracing it. And the biggest limb fact, the biggest limitation, and is going to be us, it's going to be humans, not applying the technology properly or misusing the technology. And so I think in 10 years time, you should even have like a, hey man, you haven't played in a while. You have a game that you can play. You're playing right now. You haven't made your move, or like you need to do better. Like there's things that you haven't done yet. You should start to understand. This game will help you understand integrating air missile defense more. Do you want to play it? You're like, oh, okay. And then what you're going to have is like more educated, more, you know, the intellectual acumen and intellectual capital within our organizations is going to go up. And I think the faster we can get to doing that, the better we're prepared to deter. And then if we have to fight, we're going to fight and make sure we win against any future opponent.
Well, I'm an eternal optimist. And so based on your previous answers about all the technology advances that you're currently integrating into war games, I mean, you talked about generative AI and LLMs and how you can best use those. I'm very motivated based on what you just said there, that we can get to those places in 10 years, because it sounds like you're there. Or at least it sounds like you're moving in that direction.
I'm a good car salesman.
Yeah. But the inertia is sometimes the hardest part, just to get people moving. So that's good. I just want to harken back to one thing. So in Sebastian's episode, last episode, you made reference to it. He said a quote from Lord of the Rings. You mentioned Chronicles of Narnia, which C.S. Lewis.
Chronicles of Narnia. Yeah, we're all about science fiction.
So I just want to say that you guys, you know, great minds think alike, and the wargaming brethren, they're on the same page there.
Yeah, I've been looking up to Sebastian for a while. He's fantastic, man. He's doing lots of cool stuff. He's all over the place. I'm like, I thought I was a busy guy, man. Sebastian's doing so much stuff, man. He's amazing.
Yeah, we've been planning this conference with him because he's got the Wargaming Society at Georgetown. And every time we email him, he's in a different country from somewhere else doing a war game. So
that's
hard
great,
to nail him
man.
Down.
Hey, it's time to clone that guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So normally we would do the rapid fire questions, but you've already done those. I don't know if you remember your answers from the previous one.
Oh, man. I might.
I'll just ask one. We won't do all of them, but the one that I think changes the most is, especially for me, like if somebody asks me what my favorite movie is,
yeah,
it depends on the day, the month, the year. So do you remember what answer you gave when we asked you what your favorite movie was?
Yeah, I do. Because I always say it's like I like Starship Troopers, but I will change my answer now because you know why? I got to recently meet Max Brooks, this amazing, incredible American and patriot. He came to Brussels. They're helping all these screenwriters, helping us tell a better story for NATO. So I got to meet a lot of cool Hollywood folks, Max being one of them, and he's a great guy. So I read World War Z. I watched the movie, of course, but I was like, I never picked up the book. So I went back and just picked up the book. And I'm going to say, like, the movie's good. The books, as people say, is even better. But Max is just genuinely an amazing human being, and he does a lot for our army. And he's working on a new book now. I don't know if I'm able to disclose, but it sounds like I've been helping with some of the questions because it's in a place I care about. Mega City, really cool stuff. I mean, it looks like another blockbuster on the way coming out. So quick plug for Max Brooks, he does a lot for us. And I'm just amazed at how much he knows about defense, history, a range of topics. I think you've had him on. Have you had him on your show? Because if not, we need to get this guy on there.
We haven't had him on the podcast.
All right. Challenge to hashtag challenge Max Brooks. Get on here. I'll message him.
Call him out. He did come to a conference of ours years and years ago before we started making people proclaiming them as official mad scientists. He spoke at one of our conferences and he ripped apart our hover bike idea that the Army was thinking about.
Did he? Yeah. He's got an opinion, but man, he's clever. He's funny. Like, yeah.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to message him right now. Like,
yes,
Max,
we'll
you get on with mad
we'll
scientist
anytime
pod.
He wants. Yeah, he's an amazing guy because you think about, you know, who his dad was, and he was a writer on SNL, and he's also really involved in like national defense now. And it's like this is a weird crossover, but it's effective and it helps.
He just cares. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of people like that's just the great thing about him. He just cares.
Yep. Well, Colonel David, this has been an awesome conversation. It's a good primer for us to get ready for our conference in November, 6 and 7 November at Georgetown. We're going to have our Wargaming Conference. Colonel David will be there. He'll be on a panel. He's going to go over some of the use cases that he's seen out there in UCOM. So if you're interested, check out the MadSci blog. You can get the information on how to register. You can come there, discuss Wargaming, play some games that night. We're looking forward to it. We're very excited. We're very excited to have you back in the States. And we look forward to seeing you there. So thanks for coming on the show today and talking wargaming with us.
No, thanks. A pleasure and honor. I really appreciate it. So look forward to seeing you guys in person soon. Get some. It's been a while since I've been in the land of the free. Need some taste of freedom. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll go out and get a burger and a milkshake.
That sounds great.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Convergence. I'd like to thank our guest, Colonel Arnel David. You can follow us on social media at ArmyMadSci, and don't forget to subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you accessed it. This feedback helps us improve future episodes of The Convergence and allows us to reach a bigger and broader audience.